Good evening. Welcome to Money Matters. I'm Charlie Shields, Wells Fargo Advisors, LLC. My co-host tonight is Paul Mitchell, Vice President of Beneficial Bank. And our special guest is Christopher Nardo. And we're going to call him Chris, the President and CEO of Monument Bank. And it's going to be an interesting show because everybody's wondering what's going on with the banks. Is the economy going to start to grow? And we're going to find out from these two experts. Okay, let's get started with the first question. Bankers are probably very interested in federal rates, interest rates, and federal funds, and when they're going to raise rates and all that sort of thing.
Absolutely.
What's going on? It used to be that the criteria was all internal to the U.S., and at the last Fed meeting, it looks like suddenly they're bringing in outside forces.
Sure. Well, let's talk about, for example, China, the second biggest economy in the world. So they sell a lot of stuff to the U.S., for example. So if the Chinese economy is sliding, and there seems to be some evidence of that, there's going to be less of an impact on the U.S. in terms of you know, what they're going to be able to buy and how the economy is going to grow. So there you go, right there. China's the big one.
Okay, that's a huge part of the story, and the Fed is trying to say, I guess, that they only look at criteria outside of the U.S. in terms of what its effect will be on the U.S. economy, and that's the excuse they use, that they haven't changed their criteria, right?
Right. There's an impact there, yeah. Unemployment seems to be good. Again, not great. Not great enough to say, well, the economy is really growing quickly, so that the brakes should be put on a little bit and interest rates should be increased. So there's been some sliding there.
Okay, so that brings up the next question. Do you expect a worldwide recession?
Wow, another one?
Yeah, well, that's the fear, and that's why, you know, the 10-year yields, and I want to remind our viewers and listeners not to time the market decisions here, because this is taped, and it'll be aired one place, and then 2 weeks later aired another place. So don't go run out and buy anything because we told you to do it today.
Right.
So, yeah, it looks to me like the way the 10-year yields plunged a while back, there was fear of a recession, and then without dating the show, lately it looks like rates are coming back up and maybe things will be okay. So I think that's one of the big questions people are asking.
Right. Well, it's a matter of time. I mean, for a while they were saying by the end of this quarter, last quarter, that rates might go up. Now they're talking about this quarter. And it's a matter of, A, when they're going to go up, and also a matter of how much and over what period of time. I mean, if rates go up an eighth of a point or a quarter of a point or something like that, yeah, that's an indication of something, of direction. But are they going to go up by, 200 basis points in the next 12 months? You know, that would be really very significant.
It doesn't look so. Another question a lot of my clients are asking me is, hey, energy prices are down. It makes me feel good at the gas pump. It's supposed to positively affect other parts of the economy. Mm-hmm. Why was everything going down, including stocks that should benefit from energy?
Right. It's some difficult questions there. Another piece of news, which is a little bit timely, is UPS and FedEx are talking about energy surcharges. Surcharges with oil at half what it used to be. It's kind of crazy. Airplane fares, the same. They have airplane fares going down in the last 12, 18 months following the drop in oil prices. Nobody I know has seen that.
Sure. And my gut feeling is that will be positive for certain sectors, assuming oil stays down at 40 or 50 bucks. I don't think it's going to 20. It looked like people were talking that way.
Yeah.
But so now it looks like it's stabilized. But as long as prices stay down there, I think it will positively affect airline stocks and other segments of the economy. It just doesn't happen instantly, right?
Right. Absolutely not.
Sure. Okay. Well, let's talk about the different kinds of sectors and whether you think that this recent drop in the market is a buying opportunity in certain sectors.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, is the bottom in the market? Let's start with that.
Yeah. Well, bottom, I thought it reached new highs recently.
Exactly.
It's slowing down a little bit perhaps, but I think just some adjustments up and down. I think, is it less volatile than it was with all those intraday traders,
yeah,
I should say.
Yeah.
I think the volatility in the average person, investor, getting shut out of the market is of a concern.
Sure. Well, and I think you're right that it's interesting how people are panicking after a 10% correction. I think because we had a 50% correction in 2001,
yeah.
80% really in the internet stocks. And then we had another huge correction in 2008. So after a couple of those that are only supposed to happen once in a generation, mm-hmm. it doesn't take much. All the market has to do is say boo.
Yeah.
And everybody feels like, oh my God, are we going into another recession and all that sort of thing. Well, within the market, biotechs, Hillary Clinton made some comments the other day that mm-hmm. it's okay for these biotech companies to spend all their money generating these wonderful cures, but then we got to make sure they don't get to take any profits.
Right, right, so, to generate profits like, to do research to develop new drugs.
Yeah, so it seemed like the biotechs really got hit. Does that make them a buying opportunity now, or how do you feel about that?
Well, like so many things, it's tough to make a generalization about an industry. I mean, certain biotech companies certainly are the ones to focus on, and there are lots of others that you know probably won't be around in 5 or 10 years.
Yeah,
so
and there
be cautious.
And there's some interesting biotech indexes for those people who think that biotech may have bottomed. And then the other thing to think about is how much influence would a president have. It looks like it's probably going to be a Republican Congress, and so to put in rules penalizing companies, and I realize there's been a couple of companies who have raised prices enormously.
Yeah, yeah.
Company was purchased, and a guy went up like several 100%
or 1,000%,
prices,
yeah.
and that's what actually started all of this. But my gut instinct is a biotech index might be a pretty good idea. But mm-hmm. we want to remind everybody, talk to their own financial advisor
right.
before they make those decisions. We aren't attorneys, we aren't accountants, and the advice we give is just for something for you to take another look at, mm-hmm. right?
That's good advice, Charlie.
Okay, so how about the healthcare sector? We've got one party that's running for president saying they want to reverse everything in mm-hmm. Obamacare,
yeah,
and
yeah.
We've got the Democrats saying that they're going to make sure it stays in no matter what. So how do you feel about the big pharma type of stocks? Are they going to be a little more stable and steady than the biotechs?
I would think overall, I mean, the demographics are there, Charlie. I mean, you, me, we're going to be bigger customers of pharma in the next few years than in the past. And, generally speaking, the population, the baby boomers, et cetera, are aging. And even though we are healthier than maybe the previous generations, we're going to be real big consumers. So I'd still be very, very positive on the healthcare industry in general. But again, it can get out of kilter a little bit of a boom bust type of thing that will drop down a little bit. But overall, a good sector to be in.
Fair enough, Paul. And I want to talk about the banks, but I want to wait till both of you guys have a chance to weigh in on that one. So
fair enough.
Let's move right on to commodities. How do you feel about gold, silver? Should anybody be thinking about having a small portion of their investments in commodities to protect themselves from inflation these days?
Probably a little bit. I think like most portfolios, they should be have different weights at different times and some adjustments. But I think a balanced portfolio should have a little bit of those. Just again, watching the values, the prices. Get in when you think things are a little bit lower, and don't be too aggressive when things get pretty high.
Okay, I know Warren Buffett likes to buy low and sell
yeah.
high, and and gold's come down from I guess $1,900 to down around $1,150.
Sure.
Silver's come down from 50 to 14. So if somebody wants to protect themselves, this might be a good time to put 5% of your money into those type of investments and hope you never make a nickel on it because everything mm-hmm. else is doing
right,
well.
Right, right, right. And remember, 5, 6, 8 years ago, gold was around, 400?
Yeah, that's right.
So
yeah,
maybe it's reached a new plateau, not sure.
Yeah, okay, good point. Let's talk about China and Asia for about a minute or two. We keep hearing that China's going out of business. How do you feel about that?
Well, certainly not going out of business. I think with Apple, for example, the Apple iPhone, more Apple phones are sold in China than any other country in the world. Apple's doing quite well. It's a matter of, I guess, relativity. The boom of China that was continued to go on, I don't know, forever, the next 10 or 20 years, the bloom is off the rose a little bit there.
But even if it's growing at 5 or 6% a year, and we're growing it too, it's still a place to look.
Absolutely. And other developing countries, India is still something to look at, parts of South America.
Terrific. Have you got a question for me?
I sure do. We've got a question from one of our call viewers. Ralph Thomas Villanova asked, where do you see inflation in the near future? So where is your crystal ball, Charlie?
Okay, well, I'll pull out the crystal ball and give you the best answer I can. There's three different things that I look at to determine inflation. The yield on the long-term bonds, which is still way low, and that's telling us that it's a green flag, that inflation's not coming back. The strength of the dollar. If the dollar is strong in the United States, it shows that people have confidence for whatever reasons in what's going on. Maybe gridlock in Washington is a good thing, who knows? But the dollar is saying that we're going to be okay. And also gold and silver. And so if gold and silver are behaving themselves, heading down instead of up, then I'd say for the immediate term, we're getting all systems are okay, and we don't have to worry about a big rise of inflation anytime soon. But the reason I call those three the vigilantes, we can watch them, and they are going to enforce measures against what the government does. If we start printing too much money, you'll start seeing gold go up, you'll see long-term interest rates rise. So that's my answer for that.
Well, sounds like good news. You know, in the last 10, 20, 30 years, we've seen some wild gyrations in inflation. It's great to see it at a manageable level perceived to be manageable in the near future anyway.
Good. Well, our viewers and listeners want to get some questions answered. So if you have a question you want to send in, here's how to do it.
You can have your questions answered on Money Matters. Please go to our website, money-matterstv.com. On our homepage, click on the banner on the right that says, Send Us Your Questions. While you're on our website, you can find information about our host and guests, as well as show notes and links about this show and past shows. Money Matters is also available as a podcast on iTunes and Stitcher, so you can listen to Money Matters while you're on the go. That website address, again, is money, M-O-N-E-Y, dash matters, M-A-T-T-E-R-S, TV.com.
And now it's time for our special guest, Chris Nardo, President and CEO of Monument Bank. Well, Chris, let's continue the discussion about interest rates. What kind of impact is that going to have on consumers and that sort of thing?
Well, right now, not much of an impact. If you have credit cards, if you have revolving debt, like a home equity line of credit, as rates go up, you may or may not know. Typically, it's tied to Wall Street Journal Prime, your rates. So Wall Street Journal Prime typically moves with a Fed announcement. Those are the first things to take a hit, and rates begin to go up. And then you see the car loans, personal loans, other consumer credit items. Right now, not much to talk about, but it's still a great time to borrow. So if whatever bank you go to, and you want to get a home equity line, if you want to convert to a line to a loan, you're a small business looking to borrow. Maybe you're some type of a real estate investor looking to refi, make another purchase. Still a great time to borrow money. You know, rates are low, so this would be the time to get off the sidelines and do something.
I heard it said that banks don't do so well when interest rates are real low, like they have been recently. They do better when interest rates are high. Now, how does that work?
Well, that typically works as rates go back up. The deposit rates that you have to pay, interest rates, maybe on CDs or savings or money markets, it's lagging. Can typically hold those lower rates, price your loans a little higher, and your margin increases.
Okay.
Right now, with rates so low for such a long period of time, as you both gentlemen probably already know this, is that it's just a fierce competitive market out there. So right now, rates have been low for a long period of time. Most of the banks are chasing the same creditworthy borrowers. So the borrowers are just shopping their deals from bank A to B to C, and that's compressing our margins. So as rates begin to go up, begins to separate the wheat from the chaff, so to speak, and our margins should improve.
Oh, interesting. Sure. You mentioned about credit cards. Another aspect of credit cards is this new thing called, I think, CMV, the chips that they're putting in cards like they've had in Europe for years.
Called EMV. The standard's been around for a while. It's short for Euro MasterCard Visa. So it started in Europe. Europe's had it for quite a long time. If you've traveled overseas in the last few years, Americans traveling had to get a new credit card with a chip on it.
I've run into that, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So instead of swiping it, similar to some ATMs, you put the card in the terminal, mm-hmm. it pushes the card in the terminal, verifies, and you sign for your transaction. So MasterCard and Visa said October 2015, that's our drop dead date, so mm-hmm. the date has come and gone. The credit card processing industry has not imploded. So what has happened is that issuers such as, you know, Bank of America, JP Morgan Chase, and some of the other issuers, they've done what's called a mass reissuance. They've said, okay, we're going to...
Here's an example of a chip card.
Perfect example. Yeah. They're going to mass reissue, or what our bank is going to do, we'll probably, as cards expire, just reissue them over time. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. However, what this doesn't, it's going to eliminate quite a bit of the in-person fraud. If someone has stolen your credit card, maybe manufactured a dummy card to mm-hmm. go into a retail location. But what this will do, it will tamp down, but not eliminate the offline or the internet fraud.
Sure. That data breaches is a big subject because these cybersecurity stocks are going nuts. And I hear horror stories where people now are changing their account number, and the next day they're into that account again, like they've been a mole getting into the system. How do you try to stop that?
There's so many things you need to do, but there's some key things that as a consumer or a small business should do. First of all, you need to check your bank, your banking relationships on a regular basis. Online banking is the way to go. You probably should be getting your statements, you know, don't do the paper statements, get them electronically delivered so someone can't take them out of your mailbox or take them off your desk.
Every morning I get my cup of coffee and I take a look at my accounts first thing in the morning.
Great habit to get into.
No surprises.
Yeah, the credit card's the same thing. Look at that on a daily, weekly basis. Set your smartphone up or your email to get alerts if a transaction's mm-hmm. over $100. Send me.
I like that. I sign up for all of those.
Yeah. You have to be vigilant. The other thing is that the consumer and the business is the first line of defense for the bank. The bank can only do so much with its systems. I mean, bank systems are traditionally very secure, very safe, but it's the user, the end user. So what you need to really do is make sure your operating system's up to date, your antivirus is up to date. And
you're talking about me, my computer, not you, the bank.
Yeah, you, the user, sitting there at home mm-hmm. with your cup of coffee, mm-hmm. making sure your computer's up to date, your mm-hmm. antivirus is up to date, because that's the first line of defense. Because there's all kinds of crazy software, malicious software that they can install on your computer, track your keystrokes, look at your screen, hack in your email, pretend that they're you, send emails to people to compromise accounts and perhaps your relationship with the bank. Mm-hmm. Some of the things we do now, we actually go old school in a lot of transactions. If we get an email or a text message or even a phone call, we'll take the information from the customer, we'll ask for a callback number and call them back and verify mm-hmm. the information.
Yeah.
You know, have that personal contact.
We have that rule too. We call a customer before money's transferred out when it comes in by email that mm-hmm. they're in Yugoslavia and the granddaughter needs help or whatever.
Exactly. We really have done a good job of clamping down on that, and then we have some internal layers to challenge, you know, to challenge the request to make mm-hmm. sure it's a legitimate request coming from a legitimate customer.
Right. Shifting the conversation a little bit to small businesses. You have some tenets for small business borrowing?
Well, yeah, there's some basic things. I mean, things I've seen over the years. Borrowers come into the bank. You know, one of the things you need to do yourself a service, if you're not on a QuickBooks system or someone's not doing that for you, you need to have the financials of how much money am I making as a business? You know, where's my money going? Where is it coming from? You know, that's really crucial. Working with an accountant, the tax code is so complicated. The regulations from the IRS and from the state are just volumes of regulations that businesses have to deal with. And the key thing is, especially when you come to a bank, is you have to have a story. Mm-hmm. You know, what is my business? What am I doing? I mean, you guys, as you look at sectors, market sectors and companies, you have to be able to tell a story. You know, how long have I been in business? What are my, who are my key customers? Where are my key markets? And what are the things I need to do to be successful? And this is how I see partnering with the bank, you know, building that relationship.
Yeah, that's a good word, partnering, because some businesses are, you know, either timid or they think it's the big bad bank or something like that. It's us against them.
Right.
And I don't think that's probably helpful.
It's not helpful at all to the bank or the business. So you got to have to build that partnership, that relationship. And that's it. Find out who your banker is. Because a lot of people, they get caught up on the apps on their phone or their tablet, calling an 800 number, and you ask a simple question, well, who's your banker right now? Well, I've no idea. I pull up this app on my phone.
Banker, I mean, like a person.
Yeah, call a person.
Yeah.
I know as a subsidiary, we're in the securities business. We help people with their stocks and bonds and maybe with our interrelationship with a mortgage, that sort of thing. But if one of your customers comes in and says, my Aunt Sally died and left her $500,000, how do you help that client?
Well, how you help them is we don't offer, quote, you know, financial advisory services or insurance services. You sit them down and you go through your short checklist. Okay, do you have an attorney to help you with the will? You know, do you have an accountant who can assist you with filing your state return? Do you have a financial advisor? You know, do you have an insurance advisor? So we always Q&A our customers, you know, quite a bit and try to give them guidance and say, you know, these are the type of people you need to be talking to.
Well, that's really important because you've established trust with that client and they're coming in with all of a sudden a lot of money they never dreamed they have, and they need to talk to somebody they've got a lot of trust and confidence in.
Yeah, and we try to be impartial for a lot of services because we don't offer them, so people say, you know, I've heard some good things about this person or that person, what do you think? Mm-hmm. You know, and we can opine a little bit about what we know about these people.
Yeah. Banking regulations, we read about all the time. How's that impacting the banking industry and the delivery of services to customers?
Well, the big thing is, you know, over the years, securities and insurance and banking are highly regulated. The volume of regulation, it's hard to stay compliant. They're always changing the regulations. The CFPB, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, they come up with rafts and rafts of rules and regulations. Their latest is abbreviated. It's called TRID. Mm-hmm. It's supposed to improve the ability of a consumer to shop their loan to various mortgage providers. Mm-hmm. It has really caused a problem in the industry. It is voluminous in its way of paperwork. The realtors don't quite understand it. The banks and the consumers certainly don't understand the rules. Mm-hmm. And the average package, we sell all of our mortgages out into the secondary market. Mm-hmm. And my mortgage ops guy was telling me this a few weeks ago. The average loan file for a mortgage customer is now on average over 400 pages. Wow. So that's application, from application to tax returns, to affidavits, to supporting documentation, loan documents.
And that's supposed to get worse.
And that's going to get worse. Yeah.
And this is going to help banks get more creditworthy borrowers that are going to pay their mortgages and not default or have them sold in the secondary market, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, sure.
So what banks are doing, you know, from a regulatory or burden standpoint, they're just winnowing their products that they offer. So, you know, a few years ago, 5, 10 years ago, the responsible lenders that had 10, 15, 20 types of products that take care of all kinds of customers, they're just whittling that list down. So it's giving the consumer less choice, higher fees to do a mortgage, and eventually rates will get there as the Federal Reserve gets to raising rates, you'll see those rates start to creep up.
Okay, suppose one of your clients is a small businessman and he's got a bunch of salesmen working for him, and he comes to you and he says, I want some kind of an efficient process to issue credit cards and be able to watch the expenses and all that sort of thing. Can you help?
Yeah, we can help. We can make some recommendations. We're not a credit card issuing bank. We have some relationships that We ourselves use another bank for credit card services. Mm-hmm. We can make a recommendation. But there are some really neat services out there that banks can offer for issuing credit cards. You can assign varying levels of credit lines to certain salesmen, managers, you know, owners of the company. Track it online, have them file expense reports online. Mm-hmm. They're approved by the next level up. So there are some really neat products out there that business people can take advantage of and help manage their business better. Mm-hmm.
Okay, we've probably got a couple of minutes left. I wanted to save the subject of the banks. I know you can't tout your own bank as whether it's going to go up or down in stock prices, but for both of you, is your outlook and your outlook that situation is going to get better, your credits, your spread is going to improve, and things will be better in the future, or do you think we're stuck in the mud for a while?
You know, I think for right now, that's a really tough, that's a tough call.
Yeah. We'd be rich if we knew that.
Exactly.
Right?
Really, the three of us wouldn't be here.
Yeah.
I think, you know, we're a small institution, so, you know, incrementally, you know, we're growing our loan portfolio. We're seeing some very high quality credit deals. Again, we market our services in the Philadelphia area, which didn't see big swings. So I think the Philadelphia area is a little different than the rest of the nation.
And you know your customers very well, which helps you too.
And the smaller banks, mm-hmm. I think, get to know their customers, and you can head off some issues earlier than others. So it's going to be it's a challenging market. I think things incrementally over the next few quarters, I would hope would maintain or get better.
How about you, Paul?
Well, I agree. I would also add that, again, it's tough to make a generalization about the banking industry. And we've seen during the recession, big banks, some did reasonably well, some fell by the wayside. Middle-sized banks, small banks, same thing. A well-managed bank can do well in the long run. You know, stick to its geography, stick to its credit culture, stick to the products it understands, hire good people, compensate them well and fairly, and know the difference.
Sure, and if you created a lot of value there, when you look back through history, there's been a tremendous reduction in the number of banks in America, and a good quality bank is going to be very vulnerable to be bought out if they're managing well. Mm-hmm. So, just to finish the show, I think we have figured out that we're not sure whether the economy is going to recover right now, but it sure looked like we may have put a bottom in back there in the middle of the year, in the summer. And so we're hopeful that things will do well, but be diversified mm-hmm. and rebalance once in a while, and I think you'll do fine. So we hope you'll join us next week. Our guest is going to be Dr. Janice Presser. Her company is TeamAbility, and she does corporate team building. So we hope you'll join us next week. As far as we're concerned, your money matters.